You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters Live. Welcome to Table Talk, a guide to the future of food and nutrition, brought to you by Food Matters Live. In this podcast, we feature visionaries from across the food industry, digging deep into the latest innovations and the wild ideas that are going to change our food world. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a TV presenter, and I'm a gastronaut. Today's episode is about the secrets of food photography, the tricks, the tips, hopefully a bit of the behind-the-scenes gossip, and once we've got some juicy insight, we're going to explore what actually happens on a food shoot and how to go about working with a food photographer to help make your product look irresistible. There's really only one person to talk to about food photography, the amazing woman sitting with me right now. She's one of the UK's most successful food photographers and food TV commercials directors. She's worked with Mary Berry, Gordon Ramsay, Nigel Slater, Nigella Lawson, Jamie Oliver. She's worked with Tesco's, Waitrose, Sainsbury's, and literally hundreds of brands. And I've even had the honour of her shooting my cookbooks. Georgia Glynn-Smith, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Now, we do actually have to let the listeners into a little secret here. Full disclosure, I also have the honour of being married to you.
Yeah.
Although when we met, you weren't a food photographer and I wasn't a TV presenter. First of all, can you explain where we are?
We are sitting with very large mugs of tea in the glorious N5 Studios in North London, funnily enough, in N5. And it is studios that we have built together, funnily enough, I might have designed it, which is dedicated towards food and drinks. And it's a space where people film and take photographs.
What makes somewhere a food studio? You know, because everyone's got a kitchen, presumably, you know, what do you need more than an oven and a table to take a photo?
You need a lot. We've got two decent working kitchens and they're next to each other, but not directly next to each other, which means that if you're filming, you can make the food in one kitchen and you can film in another. So one is like the spectacular, beautiful studio that can be used as a bare canvas so you can dress it as you want, and the other kitchen can be used for making all the food in.
But also there's a lot to do with things like light, isn't there?
Light is big. Light and height. So we've got a lot of big height here, so you can get a lot of big lights bouncing around the place, and we've got a fantastic skylight. And we want also a worktop where you can see the chef's face onto the camera. So you've got hobs on the island along with a sink on the island.
Before we get into the nuts and bolts of a food shoot, let's talk about you. How did you get into food photography? What was your first gig?
It was funny. It was, to be fair, by mistake. I mean, as in, I didn't intentionally mean to go into food photography because I was photographing gardens. So it was the amazing Ilse Crawford at Elle Decoration who sent me off to photograph Margot and Fergus Henderson at St John's a long time ago. I think that was in about 1996 or 95 even. And everyone at that time kind of thought, why on earth does anyone have any interest in photographing chefs at home? Because I was photographing them at home, which seems quite amusing these days as we can't get enough of chefs in their home. So it was that wonderful, wonderful opportunity that brought me into the food world.
And Nigel Slater was another early one, wasn't
there? Nigel Slater was the next one that came out. He'd been seeing some of my garden photos and my food photos from Fergus, and absolutely loved it and asked me to come along and do a test for a future book. And I won that book, which was gorgeous. And that was before I really knew quite how amazing he was. So that was slightly embarrassing, to put it mildly. And I spent a lot of time with him and we photographed that book together, which was a huge, huge turning point for food photography at that time.
Yeah, and for you as well, I think.
Oh, without question.
Yeah. Okay, now you've shot thousands and thousands of photos. We have an entire bookshelf here.
I have photographed over 90 cookbooks.
Do you have a favourite photo, a favourite food photo that you yourself have taken, or favourite book?
You know, it's a really interesting one. People do ask me that question quite a lot. And I do kind of think about it, but there are always different reasons why I like a photo and why I like a different book, because they are all different. So I've chosen, obviously, a sign of a good photo might go alongside a good recipe. And therefore, one of the favourites has to be of your book.
Stop it.
Oh, yeah. Of you flipping some pancakes that we've all used that recipe over and over again.
The kids use it a lot.
The kids use it a lot, yeah. Then there is the Nigel Slater book, Real Cooking, that we talked about earlier. It's one of my favourites. The cover of that book is of smiling apples, and they're very, very friendly, and it's very sweet. And it just kind of says everything you wanted to do. The Mary Berry Classic is one of my personal favourites because I have quite a graphic eye, and the idea of a classic recipe I felt should also be given that same kind of tone in its photography. And I photographed it all very smartly and very classically. It's very, very beautiful. It's very calm. It's really easy to understand. And the food is obviously delicious. I also chose the Cancer Cookbook that I did because that book for me was a book where I went and spoke to lots of chefs that I work with over the years and asked them to submit recipes for cancer. I gave them a few ingredients and guidance that we got from the scientists. And I love that book because it is just so oozing with love. And you open it and you just know that it really feels full of love.
And it's got a real drive to it.
It's got a real, real drive. I mean, the idea behind it was to come up with recipes that you could cook for your family or cook for people who are ill.
When Georgia mentions she's got a graphic eye, from my interpretation of that is she has a real sense of symmetry, asymmetry, placing things on within the frame and playing with ideas around that. So some things can be really smart, some things can be really messy, but there is a sense of purpose and there's a sense of drive within each photo. So, right, come on, let's get into the nuts and bolts here.
Yeah.
Now, I would say that there's a bit of a mysterious aura around food photography. There are rumours of strange and murky practices to get food to look good. Can you tell us about some of the tricks that food photographers use to get the perfect shot?
Are you really asking me that
question? Yeah, come on, you'll spill the beans.
Okay, real basic one. For me personally, I love anything that looks real. There are lots of reasons I love anything that looks real. So if you choose me to take your photographs, the food will hopefully look very real and very delicious.
You're claiming that you don't use the tricks.
I am claiming that the tricks I use hopefully are very natural and acceptable.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Admittedly, use them at different times to do different things. So what is quite normal practice would be to spray food with water or brush it with oil a little bit just before you photograph it. Simply, if it's been sitting around for a little bit, just to get
make
the
it sing a little bit.
To make it sing, to get the light hitting off it, or if I bounce light back onto it, it will ping off it. Yes, occasionally, if you're shooting like the charred marks on sausages, we would probably do that with a hot skewer rather than actually putting it on the pan or on a char.
So they're not painted on? They're not painted on with Marmite?
Did
that happen back in the 80s?
No, we did used to, and we might still actually occasionally use Marmite and washing up liquid. I combine that on turkeys, because if you cook a turkey or chicken properly, they kind of blow up a little bit, and then when they get cooled out of the oven, they all shrivel and their skin looks funny.
Yeah.
So therefore, if you're photographing a big plump chicken or turkey, you don't want to cook it properly.
So most turkeys in those photos are raw.
Not raw, but
raw-ish. They're raw, aren't they?
Only for an ad.
Yeah.
Not for an editorial.
That's really interesting. I thought it was simply because the home ex just didn't have the time. Couldn't be bothered.
Oh, no. It's actually really, it's a real skill doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a painter. That's a really, I'd like you to see. I'd like to see you try to wipe Marmite and fairy liquid on something.
Okay. I've also heard about cigarette smoke being used. So it's very difficult to get steam rising from a cup, and especially if you're shooting something for several hours. Is it true that people use cigarette smoke for steam?
It's quite funny, that one. I think that was used forever ago, even before my time.
Really?
Yeah.
Back
in the day. And then we used to use Tampax. You used to put Tampax in a microwave, in water, obviously, and that would then hold the steam let it off slowly. But those were the days when you used to film in film. And now it's nearly all done in post.
It's a shame. What about using lard in place of ice cream?
Never. Not a chance, mate.
Is that just in a dream I had?
I think it, again, used to be done. I now would always use the best home ex I know.
The most harassed Homex, you know. Get it right!
It just suddenly reminded me of when I did a whole load of shoots for Magnums, and I came out with exactly the line I've just come out with, saying, no, I'm going to do it for real. And they said, but we do have these models. I went, I'm not using models. Oh, I'm going to do it for real. Did I regret that or not? Oh, my God. We must have bitten into easily 200 magnums in a day to get the perfect bite. It was really bad.
And were they real bites or were
they? Yeah, real bites. Oh, and of course, as soon as you bite, as we all know, into a magnum, the entire chocolate cracks.
Everything
all
just
the way
collapses.
Down. And not, yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah. Head freeze for the homemaker. Now, what about food being thrown away? There's lots of reports of the fact that food shoots are, you know, just everything gets chucked straight in the bin. Is that true?
Do you know what? Not on my watch. Never. Hmm. No. Definitely not on my watch. So if it's an editorial shoot, we always eat it. And we eat it amongst ourselves because I will try and get a team, first of all, who are foodies. We all love food. If everyone loves food on the set, it makes a much, much better atmosphere. And we all want to talk about the recipe and we all want to taste the flavours.
Yeah.
If you're on a bigger shoot, there are usually lots of food. So let's say you're photographing a pork belly for Tesco's or something. We may get in 25, 30 pork bellies. So therefore, that will all go to charity. I've got several different apps and contacts that I make and we get that all sent out.
We've talked to a few of those on the podcast.
Oh, actually, fantastic.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. The other thing that I'm very aware of is whenever you're shooting, you just all sound like you're having a party down here. You don't sound like you're working at all. But that's interesting, I think, because it's not just people who are technical and they're sort of, you know, they're buffing up an apple to look sort of technically good. It is generally people who really adore and love food, isn't it?
Without question. I mean, I would definitely try to always get a team together who are passionate about their subject. Yeah, it's very important to me. And as far as us all having a party, that sounds like, yes. I think in life, in principle, I always like to have a bit of a party. The secret,
I couldn't possibly comment.
The secret to that moment that you would have walked in on would have mean that I would have started doing all the pre-production beforehand. So first thing in the morning, when they come in, we go through all the food, we make sure we've laid it all out, we've gone through the props, I've talked about the recipes, I've gone through each recipe. I've probably done little sketches of what I think the picture's going to look like so that we can check out how we're going to plate it up. Is it high? Is it low? Is it across? Is it shot from above? Then we'll get the order of it. Once I've done that, I've actually done it.
You talked about home ec. Now, that means a home economist.
Yes.
And I think I certainly did home economy at school.
Yes.
But what is a home ec? Because why isn't the famous chef knocking up the dish behind the kitchen over there?
Okay, so twofold. Home ec, I don't know why they're called home ecs. They're also sometimes called food stylists.
Hmm.
I think food stylists are probably slightly more respectful title for them, actually. They are people that specifically have trained and worked in this field, of which it's a very large field, of knowing how food behaves and will look under a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And how long food will hold for, if there's an action on it, how we create that action, etc., etc. And as regards to the chef, well, sometimes chefs are too busy. Either they've got their own restaurants to run.
You're saying the chefs haven't made the food in
their
books.
Only some. Some chefs will have made all...
You heard it here first.
No names, obviously. Names.
Yeah, but all of them.
No, not all of them.
No. So the home ec is somebody who is specifically trained to cook food for a photograph.
Yes.
And a brilliant chef can obviously make a fantastic dish, but it won't necessarily look the part.
Yes.
Okay.
So I would probably use different home ecs for different types of food. So, for example, some home ecs are brilliant with ice cream, as mm-hmm. you just said. Some home ecs are brilliant with baking. Some home ecs have a real natural look with their food. So they'll put crumbs around it, make little bits of spills, look natural. Others are absolutely technically correct and all the herbs will be put on with tweezers. So you tend to use different people for different jobs.
And I think I'm also quite amazed because home ecs will always buy the best ingredients to make food with, despite the fact that nobody's going to, you know, the reader isn't going to taste the dish, but they will buy the best brand that they can get hold of to make things. I love that fact.
Oh, I love that fact. I particularly love that fact because obviously I eat it.
Yeah, but also they really care. They really care about, it's almost as though the photograph should taste good to them.
And that gin and tonic has got gin in it.
Yeah. When it really, really doesn't need it. Although sometimes those ice cubes are made out of plastic, aren't they?
I think, what?
I've seen the bag of plastic ice cubes you've got. I find them every now and then.
No, I think, I mean, I've always said when you look through the camera, you have to feel hungry. And if you were looking through the camera and you looked at something that you knew wasn't real or wasn't good, it's not going to make you hungry.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's absolutely fair enough. Okay, we're going to talk in a short while about how you would approach a food photographer to take photos of your food and what that project would look at. But first of all, let's get a few other things out of the way. Taking photos of food is now a kind of mass media concept, isn't it? People do it for their to post on their social media, but it's so hard to take a good shot of food. Why do my photos of food always look so awful and yours always look so good? What are the sort of the basic fundamentals to that? What do people always get wrong when they point their camera at their plate in a restaurant?
I think first and foremost, when they do that in the restaurant, they are not thinking about the light, and it's always at a weird angle, probably under the restaurant lights to start with. Light is absolutely key. And I think before you even start taking that photograph, you've got to understand why you're taking it. If you don't know why you're taking it. Don't bother sharing it. It's a complete waste of time. What is the story behind that photo?
Okay, so that's making it a lot deeper concept.
Sorry, but it is
true. I like
true.
It. No, it's good.
No, it's good. It's true. Otherwise, yeah, don't bother. No one's interested.
Don't just snap it.
Don't just snap it.
If you care, it'll be a better photo.
Yeah,
okay.
No, think about the composition. Think about what it is that you're trying to say with that photo. Let's say one of your lovely sushi nights that you are very generous with. Why are we photographing that sushi? Is it because you made so much of it?
Just sheer scale. Yeah.
It's the sheer scale of it.
But also, I guess, a lot of the time, when you're doing food photography, you're not photographing a whole dish with possibly five different ingredients. You're often sort of focusing on a particular thing. So if you're photographing a dish given to you in a restaurant, sometimes it's got a whole bunch of things on there that you wouldn't normally want to be in your photo. You're right. What's the point?
What's the focus of that?
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Now, food photography style has changed over the years. We were talking just now about different ways people did things in the 80s. Can you tell me about the big differences, you know, from the 1980s to photography, you know, 20 years ago and now? What have you seen as being the big drifts in style?
I would say in the 80s, food photography was very, very staged. That was when there were lots of tips and tricks, and you were probably photographing one dish in a day, and it was very formal. They were all almost like Spanish still lives, and then they came in with just endless props, which are hysterical.
Pheasant hanging in the background.
Oh, all of it and some. And then in the 90s, which is when I did my first, the Nigel Slater book, which I was looking at this morning. Of course, in those days, we were shooting on film, and I was shooting on transparency film. So I shot all of that with flash, which is just kind of unheard of now. It's very crude. I look at the pictures now and I go, oh, wow, that is so crude and not particularly foodie, but it captured movement in a
That was a sort of reportage style.
It was very
book
reportage.
Anyway,
yes, that was a particularly reportage and very real. And then towards the end of the 90s, when I was shooting all the Vogue pictures, we used ring flash, so I was shooting the food more in like a fashion shoot.
That was Nigella.
That was Nigella, yeah. It was amazing, absolutely amazing. And then time has moved on, obviously, and trends, and film began to get moved into digital, and that brought a whole new ball game to food photography. Completely different deal. And the deal there that's changed, obviously, is the way that you can use light. It's about focus. It's about speed. So then we are now being expected to shoot. You're probably shooting often 10 shots a day, if not more.
Don't tell them that. They'll book you to do 10 shots
a day
instead
of four. Only
four,
editorial.
She does four a day.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's completely different now.
Now it's very much about natural light rather than...
It's very, very much about natural light. And even if you
I see you just shooting in natural light and I kind of thought you were lazy.
You can never tell me I'm lazy.
No, that's true. All right. I'm wearing my neck in there. I have often seen you in dusk doing shutter speeds of sort of... 3 minutes to get that final photo in.
It's true.
Determined not to use there's not even tungsten LED lights now.
Yeah, it's true.
But to use natural light. And so why is that? What do you get from natural light that you don't get from electric light?
Well, I think now I have actually completely mastered the electric light as well with a lot of diffusion to give me the same effect, to be fair. But I think that's also because lights these days have just progressed so much to give us that soft look. We all want
softness, really.
We all want soft light. it does totally depend what the brief is. I mean, I know that I did a gin and tonic ad, gin bottles, and that was all about very, very hard light and hard, strong shadows and things like that. So different brands want different...
Okay, so that's really interesting. That is actually my next question about the difference in styles. Now, obviously, there's a difference between shooting a cookbook and an ad, but also there's a difference in style between Waitrose and Tesco's. I would say that Waitrose has that sort of very luscious, you know, very sensual drive to a lot of their photography. That's what they're after. Tesco's possibly doesn't want that. Is that correct?
I would say you've got that pretty spot on.
Ah, thank you very much.
The photography for both of those is very much also about the design of the packaging. So it's not just about the picture. Obviously, Tesco's goes for a lot more colour. It's all very, very shouty. It's big text. It's big type. It's bold colours. It's all of that kind of stuff. Whereas Waitrose has gone for very kind of neutral, natural tones, greys, beiges, fawns, and very elegant graphics, bold type, but in a very elegant way. And just smarter.
So it's not that one is better than the other, it's that they're different tools for different jobs
in
a way.
They're completely different job, yeah.
And then the difference between shooting a cookbook and an ad, I mean, they're world apart.
World apart. World apart. An editorial is you want the reader to be able to feel they can actually make it at home. And you would also have its voice on it. So its voice would be either the author that's written it or the theme that it's written around, i.e. an Easter shoot might have bright yellow daffodils and Easter bunnies on it or a Christmas, you know, that kind of thing. Ads are a completely different ball game. That's where you're actually responsible for taking a photograph that's going to sell a product. And that's huge. And that product has to look absolutely immaculate. So for example, if I'm shooting a McDonald's hamburger, I will have on set probably you usually have on set a person that is responsible for the buns, a person that is responsible for the tomatoes, a person that is responsible for the gherkins, a person that is responsible for the amount of tomato sauce.
A gherkin meister. Yeah. I'd like to be one of them.
I kid you not. And they all come with enormous folders.
Yeah. And real technical skill.
Oh, real technical skill. And every single one of them has to sign each element off to make it sure that they're...
Sounds painful.
It's quite painful. Usually I will take the photo in the way that I really like it and then I'll bring them in.
Mm-hmm. And then they have to be heard.
And I guess a lot of it, I mean, I have been doing it for a long time. I do sort of know what I'm doing. So luckily I can get away with that.
So an ad photo shoot costs a huge amount more than a cookery book photo shoot. And that's because the time, there's just so many more people involved. And is it a level of perfection that's different?
I would say that I put my level of perfection into all my work on equal balance.
I might bring
different experience to each different job. I think it just involves different budgets, as I say, because obviously one is for selling products in shops and the other is to sell a book and recipes.
Yeah, there's a whole story.
Different ball game. Yeah.
Although there's a story behind every decent food photo, whether it's an ad or
one
PR
would hope.
Or
one would
a
hope.
Book. Absolutely. Okay, let's posit a story for you. I'm an entrepreneur. I've got a new brand, starting to think about marketing, and I want to make my product look groovy, sexy, but I don't really know what I'm up to. I don't really know what I want. I think a lot of time people don't really know what their budget's going to be until they hear a photographer say it's going to cost this much. What should I think about before approaching you?
You need to know what your brand is. You need to know what your story is behind your product. So I would definitely question you on that. You know, who are you? What is your brand and who are you targeting it for? So then when we can work out what the target is, then we can begin to understand the kind of look that we're after. Once we've got that look, that aesthetic, then we can work on what the actual picture might be. So, for example, sorry, what was your brand?
Well, I didn't really say what it was. Let's assume it's a new plant-based milk. How about that?
Oh, gosh, that's a challenge, isn't it? And who are we aiming at?
Well, young, up-and-coming professionals, flexitarians, people... Yeah, a younger crowd.
A younger crowd.
With a bit of cash to spend a little bit more money on my brand than a pint of normal milk.
A pint of normal milk, a plant-based milk. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we would have to understand, okay, that's very good that you do know who your target audience is. And I imagine that as a target audience, actually, that's quite hard and quite tricky. So we would first of all immediately look at the competition and work out whether we want to sit alongside it or out of the box. And is the packaging going to look the same? Is it going to be different? As in, is the carton going to be the same? The bottle going to be the same? Or is it going to be completely different? Do we want a photo on it? Or do we just want graphics on it? Obviously, if you come to me, and if you're coming to me for branding advice, or you're coming
I guess
to
it's
me
kind
for...
of both, isn't it? Because even if you have a carton with no photo on it, you want to photograph it and insert it into a world that is going to be appealing to the consumer.
Yes, that's true.
I just want to butt into what George is saying to point towards another edition of Table Talk that you might really enjoy. Earlier this year, the judges of the Future Brands competition at Food Matters Live gave their perspective on the recipe that helps fuel the success of the best future food brands. Check out the website to listen to that from May this year onwards. And while you're there, why not explore the whole Table Talk archive? There's a huge amount on there at foodmatterslive.com. Okay, now back to Georgia. Now, what are the classic mistakes that young, new companies make when they come to you? When you've got a project with somebody who's pretty young, inexperienced, what are the things that they don't normally think about or they don't normally get right?
I think so much of it is really basic. I think they just don't have that experience of knowing what questions to ask and how.
Well, they don't know why they're there.
They don't really know why they're there or how they can make their product stand out of the shelf. Mm. They haven't asked the right questions. And I think they also don't, they haven't really understood what works and what doesn't.
Oh, well, they haven't done their research.
They haven't done their research or don't have the eye. It's all about the eye, really understanding what is good and what isn't good and why.
And so do you think people should do a lot more just skimming through food magazines and books and understanding what the landscape is, the current landscape or the culture behind the photos that they are going to get shot for themselves?
I wouldn't encourage them to do that. I think I would encourage them to probably have a meeting with me beforehand to actually do the pre-production right, to work out exactly what it is, and then we can guide it together.
Mm.
Or create their own brand packs.
Okay, which brings me a little bit to my other question, which is how much can you expect a food photographer to come up with the ideas for you?
Well, I wouldn't expect anyone to do anything personally. I think I'm quite rare in that sense of actually caring a lot about the brand. I think a lot of photographers don't. I think they literally just turn up and photograph something that's put in front of them.
Yeah. Tell me what's there and I'll make sure it's exposed properly.
Yeah, as simple as that.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in the whole bigger picture.
The story behind
Yeah, I'm brand. I really want the whole big picture. I want to understand and make the most out of the product, whether that is a book or a piece of packaging or a whole brand of things.
Does that cost more money to have those pre-production
meetings?
I should
learn how to charge those, shouldn't I? Yeah.
I'm thinking about my bottom line here. I mean your bottom line here.
Yes, I mean, I think the world is changing very, very quickly because ad agencies are changing and PR companies and everyone are changing. People are going direct to client a lot more and direct to photographers and producers for film and stuff. So a lot of these jobs now are rapidly changing and getting that kind of advice from different places.
So that's my other question, really. Okay, new entrepreneur, obviously limited funds.
Yeah.
Do you need the PR company or the ad agency? Because that'll be extra money. Is it money well spent to pay them to then approach you? Or, you know, if I've got a couple of grand and I need some shots pretty smartish, would I go straight to you? Is there a benefit in having PR companies and ad agencies?
It probably depends who you are, as in how much experience you already have, how much homework you've already done, what it is that your brand is, and where you're trying to sell it.
Hmm.
So it's almost kind of golden rule. You hopefully get what you pay for. So if you've chosen the right PR company to get, the right PR company wouldn't necessarily just get me. It would actually also give the PR and the marketing and get it in front, the actual finished products then in front of the right people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you know exactly what kind of images you want, yeah, of course, go direct.
Yeah. So it's about having the confidence to know what your brand is, I suppose. Yeah. And then you would hopefully help them say, do you know, you haven't got a clue. Go back to the office. Yeah. Come up with some better ideas and come back to me. Okay. The other thing really then is, how does it unfold? You talked a little bit about this earlier, but you arrive on the day. What actually happens on a food shoot? Let's talk about an ad. So let's stick with the entrepreneur turning up terrified that his $5,000 or $1,000 or whatever it is. Not sure how much you charge these days.
Shall we go, let's say, a lasagna pack?
Yep.
Okay, we're on a lasagna pack. Mm. So we will have a home ec who will turn up, and she will have got lots of the food. Okay, we will have ordered before a whole load of the food itself, the actual lasagnas that are being made and sold, and we will have brought those in. Hopefully the packaging won't have been made yet, obviously, because that's what we're doing. That's only also if you're shooting that at a stage where the product's actually been made. If the product is in development, then we will bring all the raw ingredients, and we will choose those, and we will go through them all completely, work out which is the best and how it all fits together. So the lasagna, in what order does the pasta go down first, does the sauce go down first, etc., etc. Are we shooting it in the packaging, or are we shooting it on a plate? Are we shooting one serving? Are we shooting two? Those kind of questions. And then if it's already is a pack, then we'll probably start taking the packs apart and the food apart and really understanding what's in it and how many peas are in it, how many tomatoes are in it, so we can actually give a complete true representation of that dish. Mm. Often if they're made by machines, the tomato might not be evenly placed, or the peas might be in separate different places, which won't look so good in a photograph, but we have to know exactly what's in it. So that, as I say, we can represent the real truth. The home ec will then start doing that. We will have worked out exactly how we're going to shoot it, as in from above or from across.
You'll stick up a load of pieces of paper on the wall with your plan for the day, the different things you're going to shoot and the different ways you're going to try it.
Yeah, sometimes on the wall, sometimes everything changes as well. People might have digital copies of it, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Then I'll work with my assistant, and we will set up lights and an actual set. And a set, I mean, as in a background and a drop off or a cove or things like that, so we can create the right atmosphere there. Then we'll start working on the lighting.
And you might have a props buyer or a stylist involved,
yes,
as well. What do
Sorry.
They do?
A stylist is the person who, as you quite rightly said, is in charge of the props, the look, the aesthetic, so the colours of the backgrounds, the colours of the plates, the type of cutlery.
And it's a real skill, isn't it?
It's a true skill. Yeah,
it's not just somebody picking up a couple of plates
from down
the road.
It's phenomenally, it's a phenomenal talented skill and not recognised enough. I really got to rate them, look after them. Mm. Amazing people. Yeah, we have rather too many props.
And all this stuff tends to arrive the day before and gets put in the store.
Yeah, it all gets put in the store. It's all bubble wrapped up. All gets laid out on a table. All the different 20 different types of white napkins. And then we'll work out exactly which one we want to use. Usually we'll have two or three of the same plate or the same napkin, so that if something gets spilt on it, you can go straight back. If we're going to shoot quite a lot of the same plate of pasta, you can make sure it all goes, you know, you're not having to take one pasta out and then wash the plate and wait for it to be replated. You can keep going.
Yeah. And I guess also a big part of it, certainly for the home ec, the home economist who's cooking all the food, is I always think it's a huge amount of planning that's involved, because often you've got to make multiple versions of things that take several hours to do. And so you've got to plan your day to be able to have five lasagnas and then eight portions of roast potatoes. And it's quite difficult, literally just working out at what stage you cook different things.
It is. It's kind of what we do.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's always the night before. It's like, okay, have I ordered that? Mm. And who's getting that? And we need to actually not order that, because we need to go and pick up that. So yes, it's pre-production.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a food photography shoot. We also do a huge amount of TV and TV ads here.
Yeah.
How many people would you normally have on a TV shoot? I guess it depends on whether or not there's cast in it or not. But
yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
Exactly as you say. So if you've got cast or talent, so if it's, Hello Fresh, you've got probably a family sitting around a table. So you've got six of those. Then you've got hair and makeup. Then you've got wardrobe. And then you might have chaperones, if there are children. Then you've probably got at least one or two different cameramen. And with each cameraman, you will have gaffers, who are the guys that also do all the lighting. You have lots of lighting rigs. And then we'll have runners. Then we'll have producers. then we will have, gosh.
Oh, the client.
Oh, the client.
There'll be lots of those. There's always a load of those.
Lots of clients. Then you have the debt operator, who's the person who's actually feeding all the digital files around the place.
So, all right. So calm down. Just tell us about how many people can you have on a shoot here?
Here in N5, often it's not unusual to have 35, 40 people.
Yeah. That's a heck of a lot. So this is a TV shoot, obviously, so it's a little bit more complex.
Or commercial.
Or commercial. And again, that's why you need a space that works for all those people.
Yeah.
And it all works out. Okay, we've gone big. Let's just retract a little bit. And my last couple of questions really are about taking photos yourselves. I think a lot of people think, I can take a photo. I think some people can. I've seen some decent photos on social media, and there are people who can take a photo. Do you think that there is a sense that people overestimate their ability to take photos for their own brand? Certainly when you're talking about new brands and entrepreneurs trying new stuff. I mean, I've seen some awful travesties. But can you tell me about some of the things that you've seen? What do you think about that idea?
Lordy. I see it all the time, and it does just so upset me that people don't recognize or really understand how good it could be.
Yeah, I think
really
you're absolutely right.
It drives me demented.
Some people just don't have an eye at all. Some people aren't great. Some people just don't see how terrible their photos are.
Why did you do that? So I could quickly tell you what I did in lockdown?
Yes, please do.
So in lockdown, I was helping lots of limited companies who didn't get very much support, and particularly in the hospitality business. So I got in touch with 5 different restaurants all over the country and said, look, I'm going to help you with your social media brand. And I had to get them to start taking some photos. And I realized that first and foremost, that they couldn't take photos, which just made me laugh. It was like, I guess because it's just one of those things I do without thinking about it anymore. It's just such an instinctive
thing
to do.
You are a photographer?
I know.
I mean, you'd expect to be better than them.
This is what I do. It hadn't really occurred to me that they couldn't. So I had to try and remotely teach them how to take photographs. Or first of all, I tried to edit their photographs. And that was quite amusing kind of concept, because the photographs to start with were so appalling that I could only crop into them or try and tell a whole different story with their images. Yeah. So then I had to kind of try and teach them remotely how to take photographs on their phone. The top trick there, always with all of them, was, can you please just wipe the lens on your phone? It was classic. Absolutely classic. Top tip for all of you out there who think that you're great photographers with your phones.
I'm just thinking about my own camera now.
Yeah. Clean your lens, love. Especially if you've been in a kitchen. It's a flipping petri dish. And then I then had to kind of move on to teach them the basics of photography, composition, layout, things like that. And what was the story behind it? Because nobody wants to read it if there isn't a story. There has to be a good story of what you're doing.
So, and that's not the story as in words, it's the story as in what's your concept? You know, every photograph should have lots of layers. It should be implying things. It should be touching on other ideas as well.
Yeah, and keep your brand values throughout. You know, whether that is a value as in an essence, whether it's all plant-based, or whether you're going to use your brand colours throughout, or whether you're going to do it subtly or block-wise, or, you know, with so many different ways of playing that game.
Always a good idea to take the wild boar down from the bookshelves when a famous vegetarian chef is in town. That's what we've learned here.
We've definitely learned that.
Okay, now this is fantastic. Thank you very much for talking to us about this. But I am going to allow you a plug for your own project here. And as long as it's given as an editorial concept of potential rather than buy my stuff. Tell me all about the courses that you've been setting up.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you. I haven't got them all up online yet, but they will be soon.
There is one up online. Tell us what you've got.
It is the course of how to take great photos with your iPhone. The hot secret tips and tricks of how to use your iPhone to take great photos. And then alongside that is the art of noticing, which is all about how to actually look and how to see things correctly, or to move you forward and get excited creatively. I think it's really, my passion is to discover people's power in their own creativity and how to use it.
And how would they find the iPhone photography course?
Oh, on my website.
Go on, here's your plug.
www.glynnsmith.com. glynnsmith.co.uk.
G-L-Y-N-N. Smith.co.uk. Okay. Georgia Glynnsmith, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Stephan Gates, it has been an absolute, utter pleasure.
No, oh, you're a sweetheart. Now, you've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast brought to you by Food Matters Live. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from food waste to the plant-based revolution. Recent highlights have included editions on the potential of insect protein and exploring the growing market for collagen. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatterslive.com. Thank you so much for listening.